Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report. It is June 8th, 2017. The day that was, the day that was for Comey, right? The Dog and Pony Show, or the Dog and Comey Show. What is it? I don't know. Obviously today Comey had testified in front of the Senate committee. Very interesting testimony. We kept our eye on that and so many other things as well. A lot of news. Folks, I mean, it's an incredibly heavy news day behind the obvious, behind the Dog and Pony Show, behind those things, of course, other big headlines. We are going to get into a lot of those tonight. We've got a guest coming up right now, Michael Snyder. You know him from Economic Collapse blog. He is just a tremendous writer. My goodness. You know who he is. Everyone knows who he is. And we're blessed to have him coming with us shortly. But it's interesting, just real quick here, it's interesting with respect to James Comey, that James Comey admitted to leaking his own memos, right? I guess it's okay. It's okay if he doesn't. And there's many things so wrong with this. And of course Comey's decorum commented on by numerous pundits, and some say, my goodness, he's believable. Others, you know, it's very politicized, but interesting day nonetheless. But behind the headlines, of course, you're looking at the censorship of things like Muslims and Allah from various interviews.
Yeah, there was
talking about Islamic attacks.
Paul Joseph Watson did a video pointing this out today. There was another attack in the UK. There were three Muslim women who the BBC and others reported were Asian, who attacked a girl or a woman, the three of them, while screaming out about Allah and stabbing the woman. And
yes,
the news
yes.
reports reported them as three first Asian women, which is what they do when it's a Muslim suspect or suspects. And then they edited out eyewitness reports of these people screaming out Allah Akbar. And they also edited out any references to this being having anything to do with Islam, Muslims, or even a hate crime. And what Paul Joseph Watson went to point out is that the mayor, Sadiq Khan of London, he gave an interview a few days ago where he was asked, you know, what are you going to do with the other jihadis that the returning ISIS fighters that you know are here? And he's made a statement along the lines of, well, we can't monitor them all. And then he turned around the next day to make statements about hate crimes.
Yeah, that number was about 800, just to be clear, 800 that they know of. That they let back in after actively fighting in Syria in that area.
And Sweden has done the same thing, welcoming back and giving benefits to returning ISIS fighters. But Paul Joseph Watson went out to report that Sadiq Khan had a press conference and was talking about Islamophobia and how they are, you know, tracking down hate crimes from people who are Islamophobic on social media. Not worrying about the real threat out there, you know, going after those who are speaking out against the threat.
And this will be this is a war. This is where the war is taking place. It's a war of censorship. Michael Snyder's going to be talking about this as well.
Yeah, he is the founder of the economic collapse blog.com. And he is an author of a number of great books. The Rapture Verdict is one. Get Prepared Now is another one.
And folks, you know who he is. and so many, we've had so many requests to have him on. It's just incredible. It's every day someone writes and just asks to have Michael Snyder on. So and we're so glad
of
to
the,
have that.
Yeah, the beginning of the end is the other book. And yeah, he's a returning guest. He's been on before. Very, very popular. Mr. Snyder, welcome back to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
It is great to be on with you all again. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And with you know what, Michael, with Father's Day coming up, I want to remind everyone, folks, OmahaSteaks.com, OmahaSteaks.com, portions of the last broadcast brought to you by OmahaSteaks.com. Use our coupon code HH in the search bar. It made me think of a fine steak on a grill, Michael. You did. It's sitting back talking to you over a nice Cuban cigar and a nice cigar and a steak on a nice summer day, talking over politics, geopolitics and such, and ironing out the ills of the world. That's kind of the framework I've got in my head right now with you. But anyway, thanks for coming on. And I also want to mention, too, folks, our program broadcasts over Global Star Radio Network, also BTR and YouTube Live as well. So you're speaking to a wide audience, and much larger than the last time you were on. So Michael, I got to ask you. We got to ask you. Joe and I, right before the show, we were both wrestling over which questions to hit you with first. But got to ask you, what did you think about the Comey hearings today?
Well, I thought that they were essentially, and I just posted an article about this on the Economic Collapse blog, I essentially thought that it really turned out to be a huge nothing burger, in that, you know, Democrats were really hoping that this was it. They're going to nail Trump to the wall, that they're going to go for impeachment, that this is the end of the Trump administration. But in reality, you know, yes, Comey called Trump a liar, but you can't be impeached for lying, and all presidents lie. In fact, if you were to get rid of all liars, we wouldn't have hardly any politicians left in Washington, D.C. You know, so lying isn't a crime. Maybe it should be, but it's not a crime. So, you know, and then on the other end, the bigger question, though, was did Donald Trump commit obstruction of justice? And that's what everyone's talking about right now. Now, and there's actually a very easy answer to that question. I see all the speculation on the mainstream media, but at the end of the day, when you're talking about obstruction of justice, you've got to go and actually look what the law actually says. And so there's two statutes that mainly deal with obstruction of justice. And if people want to look them up, they're 18 U.S.C. 1503 and 18 U.S.C. 1505. That's the shorthand way of identifying those federal statutes. But first of all, the important thing to remember when we're talking about obstruction of justice is that Donald Trump was James Comey's boss. So just like, you know, if you have a business, you have people working under you, or just like Donald Trump is the head of the military, is the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military, similarly, Donald Trump is the boss of the FBI, and Donald Trump was James Comey's boss. Right. So, and at any point, if Donald Trump wanted to fire him, he could fire him. At any point, and Alan Dershowitz actually pointed this out on CNN, because CNN guy had him on, and Alan Dershowitz is very liberal, you know, he's not conservative. But Anderson Cooper got all upset with him for this. But Alan Dershowitz pointed out, hey, if Donald Trump wanted to, he could have gone to James Comey and said, I order you to end this investigation and not proceed with it any longer. So he could have gone that far and still be exercising his constitutional authority. So the first point we need to remember is that Donald Trump was fully within his authority as president to do what he did, even if everything James Comey is saying is true.
Correct. And one thing you mentioned that I think is extremely, extremely important with respect to the memos, you mentioned the specific area of the specific section of the U.S. Criminal Code. And for James Comey to take contemporaneous notes, either contemporaneously or immediately following his discussions, meetings with President Donald Trump, if he felt for one instant, and you pointed this out, but I think this needs to be reiterated. If he felt for one instant that there was an issue of obstruction or the commission of a crime that he was being asked to either stifle or to erase, whatever, it would be his obligation, given his capacity as a federal law enforcement officer, to go to the Department of Justice immediately with those notes and say, we've got a problem. He didn't do that. Instead, he tucked it in a drawer, the contemporaneous notes, tucked them in a drawer, and used them for later political purposes, which is really a low blow, I believe. But you nailed it.
Yeah, and Comey could get into trouble for that, because under federal law, he's under an obligation to report anything of that nature immediately. So he could be charged under that law. He could also be potentially charged for leaking, and that's something we need to look at. We're not sure if that would fit under the law or not yet, but that's also something that Comey could get in trouble for, and also potentially perjury, as now his new testimony is contradicting earlier testimony where he's saying, hey, no one tried to get me to shut down any investigation, and now he's contradicting himself. So did he commit perjury before? So those are like basically three areas that Comey could end up himself in big trouble with the law. So, people aren't really talking about that. But getting back to, 18 U.S.C. 1503 and 18 U.S.C. 1505, and even if Trump was not acting under his constitutional authority as Comey's boss, as the president of the United States, if we want to ignore all that for a second, if you look at those statutes for obstruction of justice, just under that, the prosecutors would have a really, really hard time. First of all, because there's a number of elements they would need to prove. Two would be particularly problematic. Number one, they would need to prove that Trump acted corruptly in attempting to get Comey to end the investigation. And that would be exceedingly difficult to prove. Secondly, there's an element that there must be some type of ongoing proceeding that Trump was trying to influence or whatever. And there's no grand jury that we know of. No sort of proceeding was ongoing that Trump was trying to influence. And so even if you wanted to ignore Trump's constitutional authority and the argument that Alan Dershowitz is making, it just doesn't fit under those statutes. There's no case for obstruction of justice. And Jonathan Turley, who's also quite liberal, has pointed that out, legal expert. People who are looking at the law objectively say it's not there. But of course, what the Democrats want to believe, they want to believe that there's obstruction of justice. They want to believe that there's a crime because they want to get rid of Donald Trump. That's their goal. So that's what they want to believe. And so that's what they're pushing very, very hard for. And there's a number of establishment Republicans as well. I believe John McCain and Lindsey Graham are among them that would be very much in favor of getting Trump if they had the opportunity to vote on impeachment. So, Trump has to be very, very careful because the sharks are circling. They want to get him. But in this case, there's just not, it doesn't fit for obstruction of justice.
Well, Michael, we agree with you. Both Joe and I do, and we were talking again before the show. Here's how I broke this down mentally here as I was watching the various hearings, and Joe is researching. We've got the legal aspect of this, of the testimony, and then you've got the political or the optics part of this. The legal basis favoring President Donald Trump is very good. Really, there's nothing legally that would suggest any legal improprieties or any criminality or anything whatsoever. But the political optics on this being spun by the corporate media, that's something totally different. And that's the fight where the progressives, it appears to me, want to take this, is into the court of public opinion as opposed to a regular Senate or congressional hearings. They want to try this in the minds of the public. And I think that this is what we're seeing. So even in a win situation, I look at this as a polar opposite of what happened to Hillary Clinton in the Benghazi hearings and Holder and Fast and Furious and such, where they prevailed, exquisitely prevailed, optically in the media, at least by way of the corporate media, but failed on the legal avenue. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you make a lot of sense there. I agree with you in that Trump is going to come out of this, you know, not necessarily looking the greatest, because, you know, he didn't do anything that was a crime, but, you know, an argument could be made that it was inappropriate or that it didn't look great. And the Democrats are going to try to make as much of this as they possibly can, because they're really focusing on 2018, the midterm elections, and their goal, what the Democrats want to do, they want to create this huge anti-Trump backlash, which will give them this surge to retake the House, retake the Senate, and then from there, beyond that, then they would have the majorities to impeach Trump, do whatever they wanted to do, and they're going to keep trying until they can find something that sticks. But they need a majority, because right now it would be really hard to get impeachment through the House, I believe, just because the Republicans have a significant majority. But if Democrats could take back the House and the Senate, well, then the whole, it's a whole different ballgame. So, yeah, the Democrats, without a doubt, are trying to score political points with this whole thing. And also slow down Trump's agenda, because if Trump has to deal with this the whole time, he's not moving forward on tax cuts. He's not moving forward on trying to replace Obamacare. He's not moving forward on a wall or any of the other things he wants to do. So this is yet another method that they're using for obstruction.
Exactly. You're exactly right. How are we looking with respect to appointments? And this is something we don't see reported on very often, if at all. Where is Donald Trump at with respect to his appointments, the cabinet positions, the various judgeships? I know that he appointed some judges recently. However, are we behind in this process? And as such, are we suffering the consequences of that delay by having this these roadblocks thrown up by Obama, Clinton, and all of the rhinos, as well as the progressives?
Well, from everything that I've read, the Trump administration is way behind in terms of appointing not the top-level people, but kind of the mid-level and lower-level people that really fill out an administration and fill out a government. What I've read is that they're way behind. And, of course, the Democrats are drawing out every hearing. I saw a story today where Bernie Sanders just eviscerated one guy who was nominated for one position because he was a Christian. He posted something on his blog about how Jesus Christ is the only way, you know, to the Father, and that the Muslims don't know God because they don't know Jesus Christ. And Bernie Sanders just went nuts on this guy. I can't recall his name right now, but I just looked at the story early today.
Yeah,
but,
I saw,
you know,
that.
Yeah, and so the Democrats are just drawing out every, you know, they're trying to slow it down. But see, Trump not only needs to fill all these positions, but ultimately we've got a deep state which is at war with Trump. And so I've been arguing ever since, you know, Trump was inaugurated, that Trump needs to really hurry up and basically do a full house cleaning of these government agencies, as many people as possible. But then the problem is, you got to find people to fill all those positions. Then you got to, you know, get them and go through their hearings and get them. And so it's a very long process. But ultimately, you know, we're talking about a government that is very aligned with what I call the liberal world order, which is a term that Joe Biden used in his last speech, you know, that he gave at the World Economic Forum. It's a term the Washington Post used for Barack Obama's last speech at the United Nations late last year. But this liberal world order, which in essence is the new world order, but the elite are calling it the liberal world order, but it really dominates every layer of our government agencies. Entire agencies like the EPA are just crawling with these people. The deep state, the liberal world order, where they've been doing things a certain way for decades. And now Trump comes in, but he's only one guy. I mean, but he's literally trying to change the whole executive branch, but that takes time. And then he's got to try to find good people to put into places. And that's proving to be difficult to do.
Yeah, and what you were referring to was there was the budget, Trump's budget nominee, who was being questioned by Bernie Sanders, and this guy's name is Russell Vought, and Sanders quoted a letter of condemnation that this guy wrote, where he wrote it from a Christian perspective, and Bernie Sanders basically turned around and focused on this guy's letter as from being the perspective of being a Christian, saying that Bernie Sanders was claiming that Vought's letter desecrated American Muslims and those of the Muslim faith, and it exhibited hostility towards other religions. And it was very interesting because this guy was not using this as a point of anything. This was just part of his background, and it was a letter he wrote from the Christian faith. And Sanders went on to talk about how it desecrates Muslims and Jews, but he was very hostile in his line of questioning, especially after the last time. I think it was the second or third time that Vought said he was he believed in Jesus Christ. Sanders slammed his hands down on the table and got, you know, are you saying that, you know, the rest of the Muslims and Jews are beyond saving? Something like that. He made it a very he turned it into a scriptural argument, and the guy could have said, well, you know, I'm just quoting what's in the scriptures, but he didn't. But he would have been well within his rights to. But Sanders went turn around and said, I recommend that he not be, you know, able to fill this position, just based on the line of questioning about the guy's Christian faiths and beliefs. So that was a very interesting exchange. And folks, I'll post it on Hagmann Report tonight. Michael, when we see this climate of, you know, the politicalization of everything, the Trump-Russia narrative, the Comey stuff, we seem to, in the last few months, the economy, we get reports that the stock is still strong, the economy's doing good, we're adding jobs here and there. But one thing that's being overlooked is what we went through in 07, 08 with the housing market bubble. And a lot of people are saying that the indicators are back, and we are finding ourselves in another similar situation.
In fact, Joe, we have a page of questions by email to ask, or speaking directly to this, asking us to address this with Michael Snyder.
Yeah, and one
given the central banks, recent article about central banks and such. Go ahead.
One of the interesting figures came out today was that liquidity in homes was at an all-time high in America, $94 trillion, I believe. And there are another number of other indicators, such as housing prices and loans, interest rates. Are we, Michael, in your opinion, are we at the place we were in 06, just before the last housing bubble collapse, or is this different?
Well, I think it's very, very similar, because right before the last crisis, we saw home prices just explode. And I remember at that time, I was back in D.C. working as an attorney, and some of my coworkers were saying, hey, I really got to buy a house quickly before I get priced out of the market. So the housing prices were going up so fast, and my coworkers were racing to try to buy a place before the prices just went up too high, and they couldn't even find anything to afford anymore. And of course, we know what happened afterwards, and things completely crashed. And then, you know, people were so underwater, you know, because they got these mortgages they couldn't afford. So I think it's very, very similar. We're seeing so many parallels to the buildup of last time around. And you know, these things keep happening over and over. You know, since the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, we've had 18 different recessions or depressions, where we've got these boom and bust cycles that happen over and over again. And the more central banks interfere, the more the Federal Reserve interferes, the federal government interferes, the bigger the booms and the busts tend to be. And so now what we've seen since the 2008, we've seen more interference by the Federal Reserve in terms of pushing interest rates all the way down to the floor, in terms of, you know, trillions of dollars of quantitative easing, pumping money into the financial markets. We've never seen intervention on that scale by the Federal Reserve before. And then also the federal government, where when Barack Obama entered the White House, we were $10.6 trillion in debt. Now we're essentially $20 trillion in debt, adding more than $9 trillion of debt to the national debt during Obama's 8 years in the White House, unprecedented. And what that did was take $9 trillion of consumption from the future and bring it into the present. And so, and that should have stimulated the economy like crazy. because the federal government has never done anything like that before, spent so much money that it didn't have. But, and you guys probably saw my article on this, what kind of economic growth have we seen over the past 10 years? I went back and averaged economic growth over the last 10 years. I got on my calculator and I did this and took all 10 years, add them together, divided by 10, and what I found was average economic growth over the last 10 years has been 1.33%. Absolutely terrible. I said, man, that sounds horrible. So what I did then is I compared it to the 1930s. I went back to the 1930s, took the 10 years there, added them up, divided by 10. You know what I found? I found that average economic growth during the 1930s, the era of the Great Depression, average economic growth during those 10 years was 1.33%, exactly equal. So I said, that can't be right. So I went back and reran the numbers from scratch all over again, because I thought that's a real strange coincidence. That can't be accurate, but it was. It's the truth. So for the past 10 years and the 1930s, exactly the same. And now, you know, with the first quarter here, with 1.2% economic growth, on an annual basis, you know, we're still not, even though the government manipulates the numbers, massages the numbers, even with everything they do to kind of boost them with their, you know, different adjustments, we still can't get decent economic growth. In fact, Barack Obama was the only president in all of U.S. history to never have a single year when the economy grew by at least 3%. And he had two terms to do it, 8 years. So we've had this really poor stretch of economic growth. And now, and we can talk about later, there's a lot of evidence emerging that this stock market bubble, this house price bubble, and all this stuff, just like in 2006, 2007, getting ready to burst, and that we're actually headed for another major economic slowdown.
And I believe this is going to hurt a lot worse, given the fact that I'll call it scar tissue has built up from the 2007-2008 crash. But having said that, folks, our guest is Michael Snyder. His website, theeconomiccollapseblog.com. He writes for a couple of other websites as well. You can find information about our guest on theeconomiccollapseblog.com. If you've never gone there, go there. My goodness, it's a wealth of information. And we're talking about a number of things that are on his radar, our radar. And of course, Mr. Snyder is also the author of The Beginning of the End, which is available on Amazon, and the
Rapture Verdict.
Yeah.
A number of other books as well.
Go to the Economic Collapse bookstore there, too.
And Michael, are you writing for the Business Insider?
Yeah. I want to ask you.
They have ran a number of my articles in the past, but these days, I'm more commonly on sites like Zero Hedge, Infowars.com, and actually my articles appear on dozens and dozens of websites all over the internet. So, you know, so many people come to my websites, but actually more people read my material and know me from all these other tremendous websites that are much bigger than mine. You know, but my philosophy has always been the more people that see the information, the more good it will do. So I've always said, hey, take my information, spread it, share it wherever, because ultimately the goal is, we want to change society. We want to change our world because we're headed in a very bad direction. And, you know, our goal is not to just sit back and complain about it and say, look how horrible it is. But ultimately, we're part of a movement. We want to restore the republic. We want America to be what it once was and make it great again and turn this country back to the values and principles that it was founded upon. And so ultimately, what you're doing with your radio show, what I'm doing with my websites, we're winning hearts and minds one at a time. And we can do that because our arguments are better. Our proposals are better. Our values are better. The left doesn't have anything to offer. What the left has to offer is Kathy Griffin holding up a bloody head of Donald Trump. And, you know, that's a perfect picture of what the left ultimately has to offer, which is nothing. You know, and the end game of socialism is North Korea, it's Venezuela. They don't have anything to offer. But we're building an army, one heart and one mind at a time. But then ultimately beyond that, beyond the information war, we've got to take ground. And so we've got to start taking back over these institutions in society, whether it's the media, whether it's the education, whether it's the legal system. The court system is a big thing. We need good, patriotic people that believe in liberty and freedom to go to law school and to become lawyers and to become judges, because right now it's completely dominated by the radical left. But of course, politically as well, which we can talk about on this show, and it's an area that looks like I may be moving into. But all these institutions in our society, which are controlled by what I call the liberal world order, we need to take them back. And it's going to be one school board seat at a time, one state legislature seat at a time. But so that's why I'm encouraging people all over the country, whether hundreds of people, thousands of people. You know, we need, you know, Charlie Daniels says, hey, we need 1,000 Paul Revere's to ride. You know, we need 1,000 new Ron Paul's to rise up and to be willing and to run for office or to, you know, take positions of authority in the system so that we can literally start taking America back.
Amen to that. You're exactly right. And I don't know how far you want to go with where you indicated. You know what I'm talking about. I don't want to give anything away, so you feel free to go as far. You know what I'm talking about, right, Michael?
I believe that I do. And okay. Yeah, and if people have been following my work, it's no secret in that here in Idaho, I'm in northern Idaho, and we're in Congressional District 1. And there's two congressional districts in Idaho. We're in District 1. And the congressman who is from this district, a member of the House of Representatives, is named Raul Labrador. And he's not running again because he's going to run for governor. And so there's no incumbent. No incumbent here in this district, in the district that I live in. And so my wife and I have talked it over very, very much, and we are very, very strongly considering running for that seat. I'm thinking of running for that seat in Congress. And but one voice, one seat, it won't do it. What we ultimately need to do, and what I'm encouraging people all over the country to do, is to challenge every House seat, every Senate seat, every seat in the state legislature where somebody that believes in liberty and freedom and constitutional values is not already occupying that seat, which is most of them. But I'm encouraging people to run. And yes, some of us will win, some of us will lose, but ultimately we need to start taking that ground, because it's become clear, no matter how many radio shows we do or how many articles we write, how many street protests we do, they're not listening to us in Washington, D.C. So Donald Trump said we need to drain the swamp. I compare it to more like flushing a toilet. And that one of the things that we really need, I believe, are term limits. Because members of Congress today, they're always concerned about their next election. For example, Al Franken recently admitted that he'll spend up to 3 hours a day as part of his day just making fundraising calls for his next election. You know, and then of course that allows the special interests and the big donors to have so much influence because they fund the campaigns to keep getting these guys reelected over and over again. So they don't care about us. Our representatives only care about those that are funding their campaigns. So what I would propose is that we limit every member of Congress, both the House and the Senate, to one term. Then people wouldn't have to worry about raising money for reelection. Instead, they could be about the business of the people.
Amen to that. And everyone can make a difference. And that's one of the things that we get all the time. The sentiment, well, we know things are bad, but what can we do about it? Well, you just laid it all out. We can run for that local office. It doesn't matter if it's school board or city or county council. It doesn't matter. In fact, the local is even better, or that congressional seat, as you mentioned.
And you never know unless you
do it. Yeah, exactly. And enough. Because if the way I look at it is, if Donald Trump can do this, now granted, he's a lot of money, self-funded, but if he can do this, given his non-political background, we can all do this.
Yeah, and remember, just being the successful real estate mogul and businessman, he's never held a public office in his life.
Right, exactly.
The only public office he ran for was this office of the presidency. And, something we talk about here is, as much as it was Donald Trump we elected, it was the ideology is what really got him elected and what his base supports.
And look, we understand, folks, the larger picture too. And Michael, I know you did too as well, the power behind the faces in D.C. and elsewhere. But nonetheless, we still have to try. If we don't try, what's our alternative? We would just roll over, curl up in a fetal position, and just not do anything? I don't think so. That's not in your character, and certainly not in ours. One thing you wrote, Michael, and again, Michael Snyder is our guest, theeconomiccollapseblog.com is his website, under the title, A List of 100 Things That Liberals Hate About America. You wrote something here, and I think it's so prescient. You wrote where you referenced the Kathy Griffin, the picture, the hate-filled ideology that she represents, that photo of her holding the head of Donald Trump. And you said, you wrote that you believe that will turn out to be a defining moment in American politics. You want to expand on that? Because I think that's 100% accurate.
Yeah, I think that was so key because that image is now going to be burned into people's minds. And Kathy Griffin has kind of become almost the face of the left and of, you know, where do they want to take us? And we've seen street protests become more violent in recent years. And just today I saw an article on The Blaze talking about how one group of socialist students in Georgia talking about guillotine Republican members of Congress. And, you know, they've started to use this violent language and violent imagery. And ultimately that's what Kathy Griffin and people like her want is they don't want to just defeat our ideas because they don't even believe in the First Amendment. You know what? Sometimes we assume that they think like we do, where we believe in the Constitution. We believe that everybody should have free speech. Everybody should be able to have their say. Well, what they ultimately want to do is they want to completely eliminate and destroy our worldview. They want to ultimately destroy our entire way of life, and I want to talk about this some more in a second, but ultimately in terms of freedom of speech, they want to criminalize anyone that disagrees with them. And what, you know, we've seen kind of this with the whole gay marriage thing where, you know, at first they were saying, oh, you know, we just want, you know, to be able to do what everybody else is doing. And, you know, not just a few years ago, gay marriage was illegal in most U.S. states. But now today, if you have a bakery and you don't make cakes for gay weddings, well, they could sue you and put you out of business. You lose your livelihood because you disagree and you don't want to participate in that. So, you know, your freedom just to do whatever you're doing, to have a bakery, you know, they're saying you've got to make cakes for gay weddings or you can't have a bakery. You know, and that, and now at this point, that includes everything that could be related to weddings, whether it's a farm, whether it's a church, whether it's, you know, doing, you know, anything for the wedding industry. It's getting to the point where Bible believing Christians that don't agree with gay marriage, they're not going to be able to make a living doing that anymore, participate in that anymore, because they're going to get sued and put out of business and financially ruined by the left that promotes their agenda through the courts and then uses the law as a weapon to shut people up that don't agree with them, to go after people. And ultimately, if the radical left has their way, we're not just going to be losing elections. We're going to be in jail, and the more radical among them would actually like to see us all killed off. But, you know, a lot of them aren't quite that violent or that evil, but some of them are. But ultimately, they hate our way of life. Now, my wife and I, we moved up here to North Idaho, and I know you guys have a lot of listeners up here in North Idaho, very, very popular up where I live. But we moved up here to North Idaho. One of the big reasons we did is we wanted to find one of these enclaves in the country where people are still kind of living free, you know, where there's still some freedom and liberty, you know, where the government's not constantly, you know, poking their nose in your business. Now, of course, you know, that's not really true anywhere these days. And we've kind of come to the conclusion that, you know, if we don't stand up and fight, ultimately there's going to be nowhere left where it's true because the government just keeps keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it seems like no matter who's in power, whether Republican or Democrat, government just keeps expanding. And every time government gets bigger, freedom and liberty diminish. People need to understand that, you know, because these days so many people are looking for government to solve every problem. But every time government grows, every time there's a new government agency, a new law, rule, or regulation, that restricts our liberty and freedom. Now, there's some laws which we want that to happen. For example, we don't want the freedom to go around just murdering one another randomly. So it's good to have a law to say, don't murder. So we want that, but our founding fathers intended to create a society, a country, where freedom and liberty are maximized. So the restrictions on our freedom and liberty are minimal, but instead we've gone to just the opposite. And in our country today, and on the federal level, we've got hundreds of thousands of laws on the federal level alone. And when you throw in state and local, all 50 states and all the local laws, rules and regulations, the grand total goes up into the millions. Millions of laws, rules and regulations which are restricting our liberty and freedom. So some of them are, you know, more ridiculous than you could possibly imagine. But what has that done? We've got a control freak society where liberty and freedom, we're shackled, we're in chains. And what we need to do, we need to completely redefine and reimagine the relationship between the people and the government. And we need to go back to a model that our founders originally intended of very limited government. And, you know, some people have said a government so small that they can barely see it. I think, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in that. But we need to completely shift the pendulum and go back to the way that America was back at the beginning.
Smaller government. More power in the hands of the people, less regulations, less restrictions. And I think looking at the bigger picture, I think that this is what President Donald Trump wants to get back to, considering his business philosophy.
And Michael, you hit on some important stuff, especially with the political climate on the left today, the descent into violence and this political correctness, social justice warrior movement. There's a story I know many people have been following what's been happening at Evergreen State College in Washington State, where it's a very liberal university, and there was these social justice warriors who were calling for a day of absence for white people not to come to school for a day. And the social justice warriors and whoever's behind this movement wanted... basically, what they want to do is bring back segregation, is what it sounds like. But there's been a development there. They have been protesting to the point where they're holding, almost kidnapping the faculty and staff, to the point where the staff is asking permission to go to the bathrooms until they are heard out, you know, listening to their demands and agreeing to their demands. Well, what happened just yesterday, it says that the Evergreen State College descended into more chaos when minority students demanded that whites leave the campus for a day of absence, plunged into even further depths with gangs of bat and baton wielding students now roaming the campus. And what they have is what they call race patrol. They are going around with bats, stopping cars,
and we're not hearing
information
about any of this
from the occupants. No, and this is an extreme example. But, you know, we see this in the universities with this political correctness movement, this victim mentality, where for some reason, these people are under the impression that if something offends you, you have the right to basically censor it and shut it down, and nobody should be offended.
But Joe, and I just want to kind of really crystallize this, Michael. I think, and Joe and I, you and I spoke about this earlier. I think this is a microcosm of what we're seeing taking place in America or develop in America as a whole. This represents what we see here as a microcosm of what the progressive left wants to do to this country as a whole.
Right. And if we can, Michael, I want you to comment on this trend of how far this social justice movement has come, and what can we do to combat it other than ignore it? Obviously, logic, facts, the truth, reality have no bearing with this mentality. What are some of the dangers that you see from this movement and mentality, and what are some of the things you think we can do to combat it?
Well, to a certain extent, I think when they do things like this and they show the real face of who they are, it turns off middle America. It turns off the middle of the country, those maybe people who call themselves moderates or whatever. But people see that and they say, that's just insane. That's crazy. Just like the Kathy Griffin thing where they see and they say, no, we don't want that. And then they can hear the positive message that we have. And that, like I said earlier, we're winning people with one heart at a time, one mind at a time, with a real message, a message that's based on American values, constitutional values. So ultimately, that's what we're doing. And then taking back the power structures of government. And I'm not just talking about politically, but throughout our society, which I mentioned earlier, that's ultimately what we want to do. But ultimately, also, we can't pacify these people, you know, because if we give them ground, sometimes we say, okay, give them a little bit and they'll be satisfied. They're never satisfied. So we've got to be willing to fight. We need fighters. Because we need people who are going to stand up and say no. And that's why I get so frustrated with Republicans so much of the time, is because they're so spineless so much of the time. We need leaders that are going to be willing to stand on principle and say no to these people. And then also we need to expose the tactics of the left, because what they've been doing for literally decades now is pitting one group of people against the other. You know, the truth is we're all Americans. We need to learn to love one another, no matter what we look like, where we're from. You know, there's no place for racism in our society, but we need to come together. But instead, what the radical left does is they say, okay, this group of people, this other group of people is against you, and they want to put you down. And, you know, they play one group against the other, or men against women, rich versus poor. And it's a divide and conquer strategy. And the radical left says, okay, this, you know, they're going to pit a certain group against another, and then they say, oh, but we're going to give you lots of handouts, or we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that. And, you know, we need to stop thinking in terms of one team against another. We're all Americans. We're all in this together. We're one people. And, you know, we should share common values based on the Constitution, based on the thing. Because, see, that's what early Americans had going for them. You know, everyone pretty much had the same set of values. It was based, our country was founded on Christian values, Christian principles, and that gave birth to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And you know, in fact, if you go back and you look before the Constitution, you just look at the early colonies, sometimes they took huge blocks of scripture and just put it into their statutes, you know? And you know, of course, we couldn't have that today because they've got this whole separation of church and state thing, you know? And then the bigger the government gets, that crowds the church out of everything. And then we end up with situations like today where Bernie Sanders was just going after someone just because he believes in Jesus Christ and believes that Jesus is the only way to God, which is what the Bible says. But, you know, so we you know, in essence, we are in a civil war. Now, it's not a shooting war, and hopefully it never will be. But the left is increasingly becoming violent. But ultimately, we don't want to be violent. If it's just in the marketplace of ideas, our ideas versus theirs, we will completely win and defeat them, because our ideas are far, far better than anything they have.
Amen, my brother. You're exactly right. You know, I just can't believe how quickly time flies. We've got about 10 minutes left, about 8 minutes left with you. And we want to just give you the chance to go wherever your heart, whatever is on your heart that we have not yet covered. The floor is yours, because the people listening right now have tuned in to listen to Michael Snyder, not Doug and Joe. So you just, whatever's on your heart, take it, because you are a valued guest, by the way. And folks, the economiccollapseblog.com is his website. There, many fine articles. By the way, before I turn it over to you, they are killing small business. The number of self-employed Americans is lower than it was in 1990. One of your finest articles, we are a small business, we are self-employed, and we can relate to that. I just want to say good job on that when you wrote that. But sir, take it wherever you want to take it.
Yeah, I know you guys can identify because just like you, you know, my wife and I were self-employed, and they make it so hard to do that, to be independent of the system today. Because what do? They hit us with the self-employment tax, which we've got to pay both halves of the payroll tax, you know, which absolutely kills us. You know, or then we've got to get our own health insurance because of things, the way things are structured. You know, people out there, if you've ever been try to go get your own health insurance outside of your employer, outside of some big group, you know how expensive it can be, how hard it can be. You know, it's an added expense on entrepreneurs and small business owners. And then the rules and the regulations. And I mean, it's just so hard to run a small business in America today. And so, yeah, I wrote this article. And the number of Americans that are self-employed today, it's 8.4 million. It's smaller than the 8.7 million Americans that were self-employed back in 1990. Now, back in 1990, of course, our population was much smaller. The population of the country was just 249 million. Today, it's 321 million. So in terms of the percentage of people that are self-employed is way, way down. You know, it's hovering near all-time lows. And same thing with, you know, number of small businesses, number of new businesses being created. And traditionally, small businesses have been the primary engine of job growth in this country. So we've got a major problem. This is just another area where we've gotten away from the free market capitalism, which this country was founded upon. We need to rediscover that if we want to start moving back in the right direction. But ultimately, for a number of years, people said, well, Michael, you're running the economic collapse blog. You're always telling us what's wrong. Why don't you focus more on solutions? And so now, if I'm going to be running for Congress, then I will be in a position where, hey, we've got to focus on solutions because, as you mentioned earlier in the show, what are we going to do? Just sit back and say, we're just going to wait, for everything to fall apart? Or can we try to do something to try to turn this country around? Well, people say, well, can you do it, Michael? Is there any possible way? Well, in the Revolutionary War, who would have ever imagined that a small ragtag group of rebels could take on the mighty British Empire, the greatest empire in on the entire planet, and win their independence? You know, the probability of failure was very high, but they had courage, they had faith, and they did it. Similarly, in our time, the United States were on a very, very bad path. If we continue on the path we're on, there's no future for our country. And so we can just sit back and wait for that to happen, or with every generation in American history, whether it's World War II, different periods, people have had to stand up and fight for the future of this country. Well, there's no war to fight right now, but there's certainly a battle for the future of this nation. And if we don't stand up and fight in our generation, there isn't going to be any future for our children, for our grandchildren. So I'm choosing to fight. I'm choosing to put myself out there. I hope that many, many others that are listening will also step forward, and let's try to take America back. There's no guarantees that we will win, that we'll be successful, but when the chapter is written of this chapter in American history, I want people to be able to look back and say, yeah, they stood up, they were strong, and they fought for the future of America.
Amen to that. I've been thinking about my own mortality and those around me, and really at the end of our lives, can we honestly say, we did everything in our power? And I always ask the question, will my survivors, will my children, grandchildren, will they visit my grave with a certain amount of reverence, or will they spit upon my grave? And of course, at the end of the day, at the end of everything, of course, are we on God's side? And that's something, and I know you as a Christian, very strong Christian beliefs, you believe that as well. So I think that all of these elements together combined make you the person for that congressional seat in Idaho. We are backing you 100%, should you formally announce, and I do hope that you will. And we will back you as well in all of your writings and certainly all of your messages that you're spreading, because all of them are right on the money, sir.
Well, thank you. And I hope that your listeners will support Hagman and Hagman and your show, the sponsors that make it possible, because I mean, Hagman and Hagman just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Like I said, you're extremely popular up here in Northern Idaho, and what you're doing is so important, because we're fighting the information war, a war for hearts and minds, which ultimately is a battle for the future of this country. So I just encourage everyone, please support this show, because what Hagman and Hagman is doing and the guests that they're bringing on, it's so incredibly important.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I got to tell you, you've got a very loyal, strong following, and I know that the readers and your listeners as well, when you go on other shows and such, I know that they love you, they believe in you, and we are blessed to have listeners, very loyal listeners, very loyal readers and supporters. We are so blessed by that. But you know what? And I know you're the same way too. We never, ever want to let anyone down. We are going to keep fighting until there's no fight left in us.
And folks, make sure you bookmark theeconomiccollapseblog.com. I just, on Hagman Report, I just posted, not the latest story, but the one that was posted a day ago. Central banks now own stocks and bonds worth trillions, and they could crash the markets by selling them. It is a great article. But make sure you bookmark the site, theeconomiccollapseblog.com, because Michael is a fantastic writer, and he writes about issues that are topical to the day, but also very important from a perspective that many don't look at it the same way, or they don't cover it the same
Joe,
way.
Joe, I want to know when he sleeps. I really do. Michael, do you ever sleep? Really?
I do get exhausted sometimes, guys, as you guys probably do too, because my wife and I, we both work so hard, and we're blessed to be able to do this full time, and I work very hard on this, and now with the thought of going and campaigning and traveling all over the state and doing everything you need to do to have a successful campaign, I mean, it's kind of intimidating to me, just the amount of work and sacrifice and just the exhaustion I know that I'm going to experience. But I feel called that now is the time to try to do this, try to make a difference. And so I'm going to, you know, like I said,
Michael Snyder, thank you. We've reached the end of our broadcast here. Thank you so very much, Michael. God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
Have a great night. Folks, we'll be right back with Mickey Poletta after these short messages. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com, that's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can. For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. Precious Timber